Hello, everyone. Welcome back to Inside Writing. This show is presented by Gotham Writers, offering writing classes of all types and sizes. You can visit us at gothamwriters.com. Before we get started, a few announcements as always. At any point in the show, you can use the Q&A function to ask questions of our panelists. Most of you know where that is, but if you don't, if this is your first time on your Zoom dashboard, you will see that Q&A button down there. You can submit questions there. The sooner you get them in, the better. The more questions we have, the sooner I will cut to them. So when you have your questions, go ahead and get them in. There's also a chat button down there. That's just for general discussion. So please keep chatter to that and questions to Q&A. And as another reminder, if you want to get caught up on any episodes of Inside Writing from season one or two or current season, season three, you can find them all on the Gotham Writers YouTube channel or on any major podcasting platform. And while you're there, like us, subscribe, leave a review. It helps spread the word. So let's start today's discussion, which is about writing contests. We're going to start with a quote from Pat Summitt, who said, "Winning is fun, sure, but winning is not the point. Wanting to win is the point. Not giving up is the point. Never letting up is the point." We'll be talking about that more later. Now let's meet our panelists for today. The other panelist is running a tiny bit late, but I'll introduce her as well. So the first panelist, a couple of veterans on the show today, actually, have both been on the show before. The first panelist is author of the books The Great Frustration and The Municipalists, as well as pieces appearing in Tin House, One Story, McSweeney's Quarterly Concern, and more, Seth Fried. Hello, Seth.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Absolutely. Thanks for coming back. And our second panelist, like I said, she'll be along shortly. She's the editor-in-chief of Friction Magazine and CEO and founder of the Brink Literacy Project. Her name is Dani Hedlund. She'll be joining us shortly. So, Seth, it's nice that you're here because you've had both sides of the spectrum where you've both judged a contest and you've won a contest. So we're going to talk more about that in depth, but I want to start with just a general question about the existence of contests in general, because it feels like of all the artistic endeavors out there, writing seems to be the only one where there's this essence of pay money for a chance to have your work seen. What is the draw of contests? Why do they exist in the literary world?
Yeah, I think it's revealing about the marketplace in a lot of ways, in that it's contests are it is odd to pay money. I mean, well, I guess a lot of, you know, things like short films, if you submit that, you probably have like entry fees and stuff like that. But usually you're submitting to a journal for free. But I think the advantage is that the market for short stories in particular has shrunk so much that contests are one of the last ways to get paid an amount of money that's kind of actually commensurate with the amount of time it takes to write a short story. Because I'll spend half a year on a 30-page story, and it's like, they very quickly start calling it honorarium. You know, when you get paid like $75, you know, even like the best lit mags, some of which aren't around anymore, you'd probably get $300 to $500 for something that you spent half a year on. Which I'm not complaining. It's, you know, you're doing it to kind of build momentum and to get your work out there and get your work read. But contests are great for that, where some contests you get paid $5,000, which is, I don't mean to be even more discouraging, but that's like more than you'll get paid. If you can get a short story collection made as a book, that's more than you'll probably get paid for that. So that's an exciting opportunity.
So I'm curious, do you get more excited to submit to a contest than to submit something regularly? Like, is there a greater draw towards submitting to a contest, even knowing that there's going to be more submissions, less chance of making it?
Yeah, I don't submit that often, because until recently, all my stories were too weird, I think. Like, I just wrote really weird stuff, and I just knew, having been on inside contests, like the contest that kind of wins is like the most story-ish story. I think it tends to reward more traditional Western storytelling. And because you're right, it's like you're not... the energy is completely, I had no problem placing stories, because like editors will be looking for a small weird piece to kind of round out the field or to give the issue some texture. But with a contest, it's usually odd. Like no one, like, you know, my whole 20s, I spent writing like 7-page really weird, what would be described as fictions as opposed to stories. And so no one was going to be like, yes, this is the best of all of those, you know? Because that is the disadvantage, is it's like you're not, your story isn't being read just kind of in its own little equilibrium, it's being read against other stories, against a pool of stories. So I don't often submit that much. It's just until recently I started writing things that felt a little bit more traditional, had more of a traditional arc and stuff like that. So yeah, so I'm usually excited to submit for, and also something we talked about, kind of like the idea of constantly usually do blind submissions a lot, which I really like. I think it's just great. And it's a great way to kind of like, because you develop relationship with editors, it's nice to be like, yeah, no, I just want to stand out from the slush pile.
So I want to get to the fact that you have, in fact, won a writing contest before. And I want to know what your experience was there. What drew you to the contest? What did you feel like there was a chance of winning? I mean, I feel like we always feel that way, but did you believe it? And what was it like whenever it played out?
I think I just recently started writing more kind of traditional realist stories as an experiment. I kind of had to frame it as an experiment to do it. But yeah, I think I was more surprised to be like, yeah, like I think I should enter this into contest. I think this is the type of story that does well in contest. I had worked with the journal a lot before, the Missouri Review, mm-hmm. but and again, that idea of blind submissions was great. It was just like, I want to see what they their take is on this without knowing that it's me. So that's mm-hmm. I see Danny showed up.
Yes, hi Danny. We were talking about Seth's his success with the writing contest. So. You didn't miss, we just got started. So
yeah, just jump it in.
Yeah. Oh, goodness, I'm so sorry, guys. I just sat down for an advisor meeting in public, which never happens. And I got the coffee and I was like, I'm so sorry. I have to leave right now. And then I just praise
the Lord. That's an awesome power move. They're just gonna be like, whoa.
Yeah, I hope it was like a big power move. Like they're going to donate so much more to global literacy. The CEO took the coffee and just ran.
So Danny, I'll get you started right here with a question. Seth, we'll get back to talking about your experience with it. But Danny, I want to ask, what coming at it from the editor's side, where you're running the contest, what's the difference for a writer between submitting to a contest and just submitting to a regular submission period? Like, why should they do one over the other?
Right. I actually didn't know any of this until I started actually running contests and general submissions. As a writer, I just assumed like, well, I mean, contests are clearly what I should go for because that's a good deal more money. It tends to be the trend with authors that are like better authors, weirdly, tend to go for general submissions. And I think a reason for that is it's a much faster turnaround. Contests just take eons to get through all the submissions. So even though it's usually less money, it tends to be like a faster route to publication. Contests, I mean, they tend to bring in a lot of new writers. I think there's a very common misconception that I certainly had as a new writer, where I was like, I can economically support myself if I just win like three contests a month, I'll pay all my bills. So I think there's kind of a transition there where I think much more seasoned writers often think to themselves, okay, like this is a bit of the grind. Like I know I'm not making a lot of money off of smaller publications, but there are always exceptions. Like usually the people that end up winning the contests, every now and then they're debut and emerging, but oftentimes it's like, oh, you've got several books published and you just randomly submitted to this contest. So honestly, it's kind of a weird mix.
Mm-hmm. Seth, do you write stuff specifically for content? Like if you see a contest you want to enter, do you write something for that? Or does it have to be like you see a contest, you're like, oh, I have a piece that could fit there?
Usually it's a coincidence like that. I think the Bartholomew Prize by Gulf Coast, it's just like I'm running a 5K. I'll write a flash piece for that every year just because it's fun. And it's like, even though I know like, it's like a way to support the journal is another way I look at it, where you get to be like, oh, because I know like my flash is just like not what they're looking for with the Bartholomew Prize at all. They're kind of looking for much weirder kind of pop culture-y stuff, it seems like. But it's fun. I use that as a challenge. But for the most part, yeah, it's like I have something sitting on my computer and I'm like, oh, this would be perfect for that.
Danny, should writers be writing stuff specifically for a contest or should they already have something that just happens to fit?
I think it goes either way. A lot of my writers use contests more for deadlines than for actually like, I really, really think I'm going to get into this contest. Because of course, as writers, it's just this nebulous world where mostly we're staring at our blank computer screen and wishing to God there was some structure. So I think often contests are kind of a way for that. our contests at Friction are really open-ended. It's just like, hey, what are you into? Send it our way. It would be great if it was like the stuff we published, but there's not a specific genre. There's not a very specific call like some contests do. So the things that are more specific often can just inspire writers to write cool things that they haven't done before. And anytime you're kind of getting out of your usual rut tends to produce really good work. Mm-hmm.
So you mentioned that there's there's a higher concentration of submissions for a contest. Does that affect the overall quality of the submissions you see? Do you see far more that just aren't what you're looking for?
Yeah, I would generally say contests are the most painful part of being a literary journal editor. I think overall, we definitely receive more general submissions. We receive like 10,000 submissions a year, and I would say maybe like 3,000 of those are contests. The thing with contests is often for like flash fiction and poetry, we provide groupings. So like you can submit three in a pack, and that's just so we, like save writers money, which we love doing. But that tends to be like, I had one great poem or one great flash, and then I had two other really shitty things just on my computer. Wouldn't it be great if I sent them over? And since we read blind, our system splits those apart and then just puts like a blank author name. So we review them all new. So I remember we hired someone, we poached them from the Paris Review, and then we made them read some contest finalists. And he thought I was hazing him. He was just like, I don't understand what this is. And I'm like, it's contests. Like, you never know what you're going to get. I could talk about how we've been kind of trying to sort through that. But I would say for like 2 years, we couldn't publish what won out of the contest. Like, it just wouldn't go in our pages. We'd publish it online and we'd pay $1,000 for it. But we'd be like, we just would never accept this otherwise. So we've been working really hard to market that better. And now we really love the stuff that comes out of our contest. But it was real dubious there for a while.
I do want to get back to some of the things you mentioned there later on. But Seth, I want to get to you. When you're entering a contest, I know you don't do it as much anymore, but do you feel like you pay more attention? Like, do you go through your piece with a heavier eye, or does it feel all the same to you? Is your process the same?
I think, yeah. I mean, I really choose my shots with that because for all the reasons Danny pointed out, like, you can't really just spam the engine the way you can with general submissions. I'll be like, I'll see if the Paris Review likes this one versus I'll usually be like, oh, this is perfect. Like, I have something where I think they'll really like it. I think that this is kind of like matches the editorial voice I've kind of picked up on from that mag. So I'll do that. So I'm a bit more careful. And by the time I'm sending out, I think, like, unless I get really specific feedback, the story's kind of settled law. So I'm not like revising specifically for, that. Unless there's like maybe, I think like once, what, like, not for contest, but like Tin House had like a very hard cutoff for 10,000 words. And so like I would sometimes have to go through and kind of take out a paragraph or two. Other than that, yeah, it's just kind of the story is the story at that point if I'm sending out. So I'm just seeing if it looks like a good match.
Danny, one question that I always run into, and I always see this on lists, is to submit early to contest, to do it early because that's the better time to submit. Is there a better time to submit to a contest? Does it matter when in the span of the entry window you submit? Is it better to do it early?
Yeah, I would recommend early or middle. And the reason for that is just editor fatigue. It tends to be like, as editors, we open up a cycle and then we're excited. Like, ooh, what could come in? But like 90% fall in the last week. And a good chunk of those are in the last 12 hours because we're writers and like none of us are good at deadlines. And just like I said, half the people are using the deadlines is like, oh God, I need to finish reading this. But also when you're not so rushed, you actually have time to like call your friend from grad school and be like, could you copy edit this? So that's always nice. It tends to be how we work and most journals work is there's a first level of reading. And so that's usually junior editors or interns. Not that I don't love my junior editors and interns, but I know that their tastes are evolving. So it takes two of them to vote to move something up and two of them to vote to move something down. So that makes it much more time consuming for us, but I really hope it prevents us from letting things fall through the cracks. And so in the beginning, they just tend to be much more excitable. They'll tend to give things chances they might not otherwise. So that's really great. So I'd always recommend try not to do it in the last week. But if you do, that that'll be fine if it's strong enough.
Seth, from your experience winning the contest, do you remember at what point in the contest you submitted your piece? Was it earlier or later? Do you remember?
I think I was, I was good to go at that point. I think like the week it opened up, I was I got in there very quickly. And I think cause it's like, to your earlier question too, like I would never, like, I think if a piece were still coming together within the zone of a contest deadline approaching, I would just be like, I'll submit next year. Cause I think it's just like, stories need so much time for the dust to kind of settle that I wouldn't waste my money or their time if I'm still kind of finishing the piece.
And Seth, then from your experience judging contests, do you remember what it was like? Did you get editor fatigue by the end and you were like, let's just get to the end of this?
Oh yeah. Danny's description of it was perfect. And I think like my humor got very like morbid very fast. We're just like at the end, like you're not even looking for, like, I wasn't even looking forward for good stories. I was looking forward for stories that weren't medium, like just like a story that was super, super just rough and zany. I was like, that was good news to me, because I was like, thank, like, something is breaking this up. It can be frustrating too, because a lot of times you're just like, the way we did it at Mid-Am is you're deciding it in committee, so it's like the editors were kind of sitting around and you'd see kind of a story that you really believed in maybe start pulling behind others that you were less excited about, and it's like, but you know, it's, you have to compromise and kind of come to an agreement and come to a consensus. And that definitely picks a different story than general submissions, where you're just sort of like, this is weird and cool and deserves this day in court. Let's do this. Mm-hmm.
So Danny, you get so many entries, you get hundreds and hundreds of entries. So it gets to the point where I wonder, like, what separates the winner from the top two, the top three, the top 10? What is it that makes that one the winner as opposed to the ones that were really close? Is it just judges' preference, or what is it that sets it apart?
Yeah, so we read everything at the bottom of the pyramid level with the same guide that we do with Friction. So it's, you know, because most of us came from the world of academics, it's like A, B, C, D, and oh God, no. So pretty much anything at the lowest level that's above sea level, so it has good character arc, it has good writing, it has something interesting going on, goes up, and then it gets debated at like what moves up to B level, and that tends to be a junior and a senior editor will fight it out. And then once it gets up to A level, my managing editor will probably look at 20 of the top submissions per category and decide the five that gets passed to the judge. We have full control, obviously, over everything until it goes to the judge, and then we give the judge complete autonomy. This sometimes is just about the most terrible thing that could ever happen to us. But we also make sure that there's a net in that. So no matter who wins, all the finalists will get free edits from my editors. And that often is a way for us to be like, oh my God, we really loved this piece. Like, we definitely see why Charlie Jane Anders didn't choose it, but we think it has something special. Let's workshop it and then get it in our pages. So it's very, over the last couple of years, it's been very unlikely we haven't published maybe 3 out of 5 of the finalists, because we just love them. But yeah, in terms of judges' taste, like, it is, it's really up for grabs, not just in like genre. So like Celeste Ng, when she was our judge, clearly she chose something that really appealed to her, and it was much more literary fiction, and it was a really interesting look at diaspora in America. And then like when Lev Grossman was our judge, it was clearly like, what is the most cool magical shit that could happen? So I try to get like 3 ranges of different judges, so we have a lot of different appeal, but yeah, it's at that top tier. I'm just anxious. Like, oh my God, what are they going to turn around? Please don't be that one story that I'm really iffy on.
I want to get back to judges in a second, but I want to follow up on you mentioned how you publish pieces that don't necessarily win the contest. Has that become like a common thing? Is it almost certain that there are going to be pieces that don't win the contest that you pull out and publish?
Yeah, there are some things that don't even make the finalist round, where it was like my Emmy cut it off. And then some senior editor was like, Danny, like, I love Helen, she's very smart, but like, this story has potential, I want it. And I'm like, well, fine, like, reach out, do edits. So that's pretty common. I would say at least 10% of every issue has some kind of contest or finalist overlap, that just someone fell in love with something and pulled it out and worked on it.
Seth, have you ever found publication that way, through like the side door of a contest not winning, but still getting noticed?
Usually, I mean, like that has been my path to publication a lot outside of contests, which I've submitted a lot more, where it's just kind of like, you know, this piece didn't work for us. And it's like the thing I tell my students all the time, too, is like editors are so overworked that like if they put any kind of encouragement on your submission, I think that's great news. And just and mention it. That's something to mention in your cover letter. Thanks for your encouragement on my last piece. And kind of like it's always been kind of rocking the Coke machine back and forth, as opposed to very rarely has it been just out of the gate. So yeah, and I think like if you're a writer and you're that position, you're in that position, I would really push past if you're new. There's a lot of like people get writers get offended a lot easier of being like, instead of, don't think of that as like you did not win the contest. Think of it like your story was so special that they worked outside the framework of the contest to get you in there. Like that, you really have to see the positive aspect of that.
Mm-hmm. And I want to talk about the fee to enter contests too. So Seth, from the writer's side, how do you justify spending the fee? Like, do you have to feel pretty confident that you can win? Do you take pride in supporting them? How do you justify the fee?
I think that's it. I don't want to brag, but I'm in a place in my life where I can afford extra $15-$20 once a month, so yeah, I'm doing okay. When I was submitting in my 20s, I just absolutely couldn't. And I think that was often how I subscribed to journals, because you'll sometimes get a subscription thrown in or just knowing like, hey, I read this all the time and I submit all the time, I'm just going to use this as an opportunity for myself, but yeah, to help support the journal. I think it's a fun opportunity to do that. Just try to think of it kind of like a weird mix of like ambition, career building, and your good deed for the day. Like kind of like packaging it like that can make you not think about like, well, I've spent, you know, $100 on contests this year. Was that a good idea or a bad idea?
Mm-hmm. Danny, what about you from the literary magazine side? That fee, if you don't mind me asking, where does the fee go? Obviously, some of it goes to the winner, some of it goes to the judges. That's sort of where it all funnels.
Yeah. So we make a little under $20,000 a year from all of our reading fees, so contests and normal. And we spend about $35,000 a year paying artists and writers. So all of it goes there. And then I throw like stupid literary galas to fund the rest of it. So Friction is mostly a volunteer run organization. So it's not like we're pocketing it. Like we're still like, oh God, can we spend $10 to subscribe to a magazine? So I totally get it. But it is the lifeblood of making sure we can pay our creatives. And that's incredibly important to us. It's really unpopular to charge any entry fee for genre. Also, genre writers are just paid across the board way better. And that's because the big genre publications have a good amount of funding behind them, and that's where they put it. Like they don't put money anywhere else. Maybe their budget for the entire year from a nice endowment is like $50,000, and it just goes entirely to paying the creatives. And that's incredibly great. I would love more than anything to get to that point. Again, we're still on like, can we afford ramen noodles? So we're not quite there. But yeah, I would love to knock those things down. We've been working every year. We try to make our big fundraising efforts a little bit bigger so we can knock down the reading fees. And we've done that consecutively every year. So I hope in like 3 to 5 years, there will be no fees. But yeah, man, it's the only thing keeping us alive. It's the only thing keeping a lot of small journals alive. So I know it's such a dick of a thing to ask, but like, thank you guys so much for $2 to $10.
So I want to switch gears a little bit and talk about judges and the judges of a contest. And Danny, you've talked about this a little bit already, so I want to start with you. When writers are evaluating a contest, how much attention should they pay to the judge? Like you have Stephen Graham Jones. Should writers be out there reading his work, trying to match something with him, or just write something they feel like fits with Friction?
Honestly, I would love to tell you I knew the answer to this. Writers tend to... like the judges tend to choose stuff that they're interested in. It's just always that way. It's going to have more of an emotional impact on them. There are always exceptions. Like Stephen Graham Jones is a really dark, lovely motherfucker. I love him. But like he also has a weird taste in like really soft, joyful stories. Like as you'll see from the pretty pink book behind you, like he wrote us a story about like two old people getting trapped on a trampoline and how it's really about love. So like writers have diversity. They're not all like, oh, wow, if this isn't drowning in blood, I'm unhappy. So certainly we see that kind of push in different directions. I would say that about content, but I would not say that about voice. If there is a writer that is super voice driven, do not submit something that is not super voice driven. Like Benjamin Piercy will choose something with cool narrative form no matter what. That's his big thing. That's what he loves. Where Lev Grossman, who is a great genre writer and has a beautiful voice, will lend more towards plot. So those kind of big strokes I would advise. Also, just reading really good writers will make you a better writer. So I just feel like always read more stuff.
And Seth, my follow-up to you is two-part, both as a writer, how much attention do you pay to the judge? And then as a judge yourself, well, let's start with that. As a writer, how much attention do you pay to the judge of a contest?
I think it's kind of like, it's definitely a good hint as to whether or not you'd be a good fit if you're familiar with that work and think your work talks well with that. But I don't think it's like slam dunk if you're sort of like, I write things that are exactly like Steve Allman. Steve Allman's judging this. Like, I don't, because it's like, as Danny pointed out, like there's also a bunch of first readers where it's kind of like, you know, there's a lot of uncertainty baked into the system, which I think is good and bad. And so it's like, I take it as kind of like a general thing, like, oh, they might be looking for something kind of like this. Or even if I get to the finalists, the judge is probably gonna be looking for, like, if the judge is Ben Marcus, I know, like, I'm not particularly languagey. Like, I'm kind of, you know, quirky, funny, more poppy, you know. So it's like, I don't think that my stuff's, like, even if it gets to him, is going to speak to him that much. Mm-hmm. So I might sit that out. But yeah, so it's not a slam dunk, but I think it is something to keep in mind. And who knows how some journals might just be doing it because it's like, we got Ben Marcus. That's awesome. You know, and it might be less about what they're actually looking for, but I think it is something to keep in mind.
And then the second part to that question, when you were judging the contest, at what point did you realize you were just like making personal choices? Like, I just like what this story's about more than this one, even though this one's better written. Or what was your experience like when you were evaluating two pieces?
Yeah, it's tough because you try to, and I think I was a lot younger then, so I was a little bit more just sort of like, this is just what I like, and everybody else should just stop. So it's like, I remember like, we my first or second Sherwood Anderson, like I really got to fight for Charles Yu, and that was like one of his first publications. And I've just been a huge fan of his, and it was just incredibly personal the entire time. I made no, like, and I was also a lower editor, so I made no, pretense of being objective or considering. I was just like, I like this one more. As I've gotten kind of older and taught more, I think, you know, you kind of have to look for how well a story is hitting its own marks. And I think that, you know, there might be something that I think is funnier, because humor is a big thing for me. But I know it's just kind of like, it's a little rougher around its edges than a story that might not be the first thing I would pick up to read, but which is just nailing its own thing, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then just getting back to judges, Danny, how do you pick your judges? What makes certain judges stand out to you? I mean, you pick, what is it, 4 judges per contest. What do you have, like a list of judges you're looking for? Or does you just like somebody's body of work, or what's that thought process like?
It tends to be like authors that I had recently worked with that I just really like that have really great name recognition, because I'm giving them a lot of power. So usually like Friction has a big pioneer section in each of the issues. So it's like a super badass, like huge author who reshaped the genre in some kind of crazy way. And that'll usually be something like I'm just really interested in at that moment. Like our new one is Rebecca Roanhorse. And now I can't do anything but read like indigenous fantasy. So it'll really be like, what are we super into right now? Also, we've been obviously trying to get better people to submit to our contest so we don't have to pay $1,000 and not print something. So we've been thinking really strategically about like which names will actually spread really well. And I don't really know why this is, but we tend to get better submissions with like genre writer judges than we do with literary fiction judges, even if literary fiction is what wins. And I have no idea why that is. Like, I assume in all the ways we advertise, there just tends to be a larger pipe that comes on the speculative side. But yeah, we've had, I think, 11 like heavy spec celebrities, and 5 of them chose literary fiction pieces. So I don't really know how that works out, but that tends to be what we do. Also, we don't pay our judges. Because we're a tiny, adorable nonprofit with no money. So it's also like, who likes me enough that I could be like, hey, Lev Grossman, would it be great, even though you have a new movie coming out and like several books and you're taking care of all of your kids at home in New York where you're trapped, where you'd also spend a couple hours dedicating yourself to literature? And like, I know Lev will be like, sure, Danny, I don't know why, but I just keep doing things for you in a way where I do not have the pull with like any big person I've never spoken with or taken out for beers. So it's also like, what is my personal collateral and can I make this work?
And then what did the judges get out of? I mean, surely they get some joy out of discovering new literature. Like, do you ever like hear back from judges like, oh, this was a great crop, or do they get pretty excited about it too?
Yeah. There's a really great thing that happens where judges, especially if they choose a messier piece, like Charlie Jane Anders chose a messier piece for her contest, but it was a really important, beautiful piece. So she judged during this time last year, right around, I want to say June. And there was a submission about a spec world in which everyone just, all white people forget about slavery, but all Black people remember it. And it was this really beautifully kind of messy, really meaningful thing. And Charlie Jane was like, hey, this isn't the cleanest, but I think it is the clear winner. I think it's doing the most ambitious stuff. And then it worked with the senior editor. And she just wants updates on it. Like, how are the rewrites going? What issue is it going to go in? And that's really incredible because she's so invested in that debut talent. And that happens with a lot of our judges. So they're always excited to see the art come together and see when the issue comes out and then like write and thank the people that won. And so that's all really great. And the higher level celebrities, when, you know, they're making a good amount of money and they're not, you know, like slowly starving to death with ramen noodles, they have a little bit more emotional bandwidth to give back to the community. So that's a really good sort of jam for them. I see that with my poets. I see it with my flash fiction writers, and that's wonderful. But also, like, we try to not be like assholes about our things for our judges. So like, I often try to choose judges that have a big project coming out so we can do a bunch of publicity for them. And like you said, some contest submitters go out and read the body of work. So that's a good kind of like economic boost. So it's like, here's all the good feelings that I care about literature. And like, here's how my publicist will let me get away with this.
Seth, I keep tying back in when you were a contest judge, but I'm curious if being a judge altered the way you see contests as a writer. Like, did it in any way alter your, like, did you feel more encouraged to go do it or less encouraged? Or did you just have like a better respect for the system or what?
Yeah, I think, I mean, like, honestly, the biggest help early on was, and if you can be a volunteer as a reader or something for a journal, I really recommend it because I think, and you would get a lot of like funny accusations and stuff from outside writers where it's like they kind of view the inner workings of a lit mag as some kind of really suspect and suspicious, like please return my manuscript to me. I don't want it showing up in one of your editor's workshops as they're like people play, you know, just like, and once you've like been inside of a lit mag and you see like the cover letters that work, the cover letters that get saved and laughed at on bulletin boards, like you, it kind of helps you know that decorum and demystifies the process into where I walked away from, you know, judging contests and working on journals being like, this is 100% doable. I'm working here, but like the Paris Review is just a different room, you know, and it's operating on the same principles. And I think that there's a story we tell ourselves a lot when we're not familiar with stuff that it's like, it's the kind of thing that other people do, like special minted people do that. But it's just like, no, it's just people. If a human being does something, I can do it. And I think that the more experience you have with that, I think the easier it is to grab hold of that. So I think contests particularly, it helps me not take it personally, but I see like, something I talk about workshop all the time too, is like, there was like a contest story that it was my first year. I hated it. And I was like, this is not even a story. This is so dumb. And then it ended up winning. And once it was laid out in the journal, I got it. Because I just didn't have that. I didn't have the skill yet of seeing something Times New Roman double spaced and seeing it as a finished product. Mm-hmm. So a lot of things like that, where it's just kind of like, just be open and be respectful and be confident that you can participate in that system in any way that you're interested in doing that.
So I want to cover two things now that people will often see with contests. The first is blind submissions and what that means to have blind submissions and blind judging. So Danny, I want to start with you. Just first off, basic definition, what does it mean if you see a contest that is judged blindly?
So that just means that the editors know literally nothing about you. They don't know your name. They don't know your race. They don't know your age. For Friction, they don't know what country you're from. It's just, we just look at the text. That's really important for us. We run absolutely every single one of our submission pipelines that way, because we want to make sure that we're not bringing in any natural bias, that we're reading this completely just for the text. So the story or the poem comes forward. Like we talked about last time, Josh, the only time that we look at cover letters is when someone has either decided to pitch something up, or someone, one of my editors, has decided to take a work on. And so that's the only time we'll see like, oh, this is a brand new writer. Or one time someone ran our contest and we had to figure out that the woman was 15 years old because I had to get a Guardian to sign. Also, it's incredible. And I absolutely thought it was written by like a 60-year-old woman dying of cancer. So good. So yeah, it's completely blind. It's just a complete interesting surprise to us.
And Seth, do you think that, is that how all contests should be? Is it a red flag if a contest isn't blind?
I think I've often, that isn't made public. Like often the only way you'll know as a writer is if they ask you not to put your contact information on the submission. I prefer it. Like, I've always been a big proponent of the slush pile too. Like, I love the anonymity, and I'm not going to try to pronounce anonymity. Yeah, there. Okay. We're going to get through this anonymity of it. Where your story can just kind of fight for itself outside of that, narrative, because it's like work publishing in New York, it's almost exclusively all that author marketing publicity narrative you've cultivated for yourself. And it's like, even when it goes well, it's super gross. And so it's fun to just be like, my personal belief is that the work should just speak for itself and that should be what it is. But often in the real world, that's not the case. So I like contests that are run like that for that reason.
So that's blind. The other term I wanted to bring up is when contests have themes. Seth, for you, a three-part question here. The contest you won, did it have a theme? The contest you judged, did it have a theme? Or have there ever just been contests that you saw the theme and you were like, yes, this is me?
Yeah, the one I won didn't, and I don't think the Sherwood Anderson that Mid-American Review still does, I don't think that does. I've definitely judged. We had one called, one I love called the Fine Line Competition. And it's about like the fine line between poetry and prose. And it was like a flash thing. So that was like a fun, loose thing. I really recommend looking for themed contests to my students if they're going to submit to contests, or looking for, I think a lot of, the name escapes me, but there's a lot of like kind of new writer contests. And I think that's a great way to break in. And also themed issues. Just some journals will do themed issues. I think that's a great way to break in. That's how I initially broke in with Tin House. They had like a desire themed issue, and I snuck in there, and that was how I then had a relationship with Tin House that I could develop. But so it's a great way to kind of sneak in your work, because those issues are really hard to fill. If you're doing like a sports issue, you know, you have like maybe three pieces that you're really excited about, and then you have to fill that out a little bit. So I think it's a great opportunity to get a little bit of traction. And because another thing, just submitting in general, like you get a lot of spam submissions. Like we'll be doing like, let's do like a women in sports issue. And then you'll get a submission that's like, this is about a man who owns a hotel. And you'll be like, okay, like, so this is, you didn't really read the guidelines that closely. So I think as an editor, if you have nothing on your kind of resume to put yourself forward, I think being familiar with the journal and submitting thoughtfully and submitting appropriately is going to be a great way to get a foot in the door.
Now, Danny, correct me if I'm wrong, your contest doesn't have themes, but your issues have themes. So how do you work around that? How do you work around not having themed submissions, but having themed issues?
So this used to be a lot harder for us in the way in which we used to essentially just do an issue as we went. So like we would choose a theme when we had a couple things together, and then we would just try to fill it like our lives depended on it. Now we are so far out because we have so many great submissions coming on that I'm curating 2022 right now. So that means that whatever comes through the contest is going to be the fodder for what our new issues are. So like we just accepted a piece, this really amazing piece about whales. And I was like, oh God, we need an oceans issue. So now I have an oceans issue I'm curating for, and I have exactly one piece for it. But I have like 2 years to get there, so we'll get there. So now that contests have so much time to breathe, they tend to be some of the first markers for how I'm gonna build out further on. every now and then we just get super lucky. And it's like, hey, we had two pieces in the issue that goes to print in 2 months. And one of them is from the contest that just locked. And oh my goodness, how delightful is this? But usually we're about 18 months out, and that allows a lot of flexibility. We had a really long thought about theming our contests. And the reason that we haven't is we really use our contests as a way to elevate emerging talent. That tends to be the main thrust of people that win, are people that are just getting started. They have a couple of publications under their belt that might be smaller, or like they're just querying their first book, and we can be a really big stepping stone for them. And that tends to be like they've been working on a story or a poem for a good while, and they really like it, and they've workshopped it, and they've bribed their friends into reading it, and it's ready. And I feel really confident that something that has that much love is going to have a much better chance in the pipe than something that's like, okay, Friction put out an Arcana issue. I don't know anything about tarot cards, but I'm going to watch a couple YouTube videos and make a story. And honestly, like I said, sometimes really weird prompts will produce really good stuff. But I think that we're probably helping a little bit more by staying unthemed. I mean, I hope so. I hope that's the thought. It screws us over a little bit more, but I'd much rather screw us over than screw our writers over.
So I want to get into some audience questions now, because we're getting a whole bunch of good ones. First one, Seth, this probably goes back to a little bit of what you were saying earlier in the show about contests, looking for contests with weirder writing. So this question, I'm going to combine two questions. What are the best writing contests for experimental, cross-genre, non-traditional writing, or just generally weird writing? Seth, I'm going to start with you.
Yeah, I would look at, check out the Bartholomew Prize. They publish a lot of their, or I think all their winners online. So you can check out, see if that's the kind of weird you're looking for. And then I would just look at maybe kind of like the weirder, you know, quote weirder, like less traditional journals. Like I think like Agni tends to publish more experimental work. I'm not sure. I haven't seen an issue of Fence in a while. I trust and hope that it's still there. But like, just be on the lookout for, I think, the kind of the journal's general editorial kind of outlook can sometimes be a good hint that their contest would be run at least somewhat similarly. So that might be something to look at.
Danny, what about you? Any suggestions?
Well, obviously send it to us. We're the weirdest people in the world. But that might be a good time to look at judges. If they have a judge that's more expensive, experimental, and a little weirder, the contest is clearly open to that. So that's kind of a really good way to look for that. There's a contest that I cannot seem to think of, and I will go on a frantic Googling thing, that is really, really great for experimental writing. And I assume it's the lack of caffeine why I can't remember, but I'm going to remember it before this is over. And then I will tell you.
I will also
add, I also want to sneak in a recommendation for Ninth Letter, is another journal I love that does a lot of experimental stuff.
They are really good.
There's also Molotov Cocktail does a whole bunch of weird stuff for contests. So check them out as well. Next question, kind of an open-ended question here, but I'm curious to hear what you have to say. Danny, we'll start with you. How can I tell if a contest is worth entering? You're on mute there.
That's what I get for trying to hide my frantic typing to remember this contest. It depends what you want to get out of the contest. I think that if the only thing you want to do to get out of the contest is say money, obviously go for a contest that doesn't have very big name recognition. There will be fewer submitters there, to something where you really feel like the aesthetic is something that lines up for you. Definitely read the editor's notes of what they don't accept. Like Friction just has a really big page where we just tell you what we don't want. Like we don't take vignettes. We don't like incredibly angsty stories about like your parents' divorce while you look at the subway in New York. Send that to the New Yorker. I bet the New Yorker would love that. We won't. So please, if you're going to invest this money and invest the time, make sure that you're actually like reading what the journal wants instead of just spamming it out. And then if the big thing you're after is name recognition, like really make sure that you're paying attention to what journals are things that like literary agents read and what journals are things that have enough name cachet that you could leverage that in a query letter. So those are kind of the two angles. Obviously there's a combination of those. Like some people have really good names and really good money, and those are going to be absolutely the hardest to get into. But just like Seth said, even if you just get like a friendly rejection letter, that is an in that you can leverage. So make sure there's a lot of things you can get out of this other than just, I paid my rent and now everyone knows how smart I am.
Seth, anything to add? How do you know if a contest is worth it?
Yeah, I think, and that's a thing too, where it's like a lot of us don't have time to read a lot of literary journals or find new journals, but I think it pays to be familiar with an outlet before submitting to it. And it's like, check it out, get familiar with it. It does it look, because it's like you can, anyone can go on Submittable and start a contest and start collecting entry fees. So it's like, check out their website. Does it look like a person made it, or does it look like a cat made it? You know, like, does it, check out the work that they publish. Would you be proud to have your work with that work? And so there's a lot of ways to gauge whether or not it's a contest that you want to be a part of. There are sometimes I never really have been up on that. But like I think there are a lot of pages out there for like alerting writers to like bogus contests or contests that are more predatory in nature. So keep an eye out for that, and just kind of use like your first date tools, you know, like just how they're presenting themselves, what they're saying, if it seems fishy, trust your instincts on that.
So I want to follow up real quick, because that was a question that I got asked a bunch, is how do you tell if it's a scam? Are there any red flags that you can tell people to watch out for, other than if their website's made by a cat?
Yeah, that's, I think like having a kind of a reputation in the community, like Googling it, see if people like talk about it, see what their social media presence is like. Just reading the text of the guidelines, you can usually tell if someone's like, if the guidelines are very like angry and aggressive, and it's just like, don't ask us for this because we won't, you know, like, you know, some good journals are like that. But I think, yeah, just again, those first date tools of being like, this seems weird, I think are helpful.
Danny, anything to add?
Oh, well, I just want to steal something that someone wrote. A member of the CLMP is a really smart way to look. Just look them up in the CLMP database. Another kind of small sort of thing is just like, look at the list of contests that it came from. Like, our contest list is vetted. So like a cute little junior editor will like email the contest people and email the judge and be like, Stephen King, are you actually judging this thing from this literary journal no one's heard of? And Stephen King will be like, no. And I'll be like, all right, that's a scam. So certainly look at really credible lists, and that cross-reference with the CLMP is good. I would say some really new journals, especially if they're started by like students, often don't know that the CLMP exists. So don't immediately be like, not on the CLMP, definitely a scam. But definitely that should first date flag, like, oh, maybe a friend should text me in 15 minutes and make sure I can get out of this if I need to.
So another question that follows up on all of this is just, where do you find contests in general? If you're out there, you just Google writing contests, or are there compendiums like directories out there? Danny, we'll start with you. Where do you find writing contests?
I will pull up a link. We have a huge one, though it's hilariously hosted on our old website because we haven't figured out how to import it over. So I'm really sorry that our old website is so hilariously ugly. But Writers and Poets does a lot of good postings for that. Honestly, guys, it's been so long since I submitted to a contest. Okay. Why don't I bounce it over to Seth while I think of something coherent to say?
Sure.
Yeah, I know. Because it's like, the good thing about the Poets and Writers one is it also has like book contests and like stuff like it has like a whole range, or like fellowships and stuff. So I think it's a good place to stay kind of abreast of a lot of different stuff. I would be wary of the Submittable has like a discovery tab, and that's kind of pay to play. So there's a lot of like, I don't think scams, but just kind of like stuff I wouldn't submit to in that tab. You think you have to go do a little more digging. So yeah, I would, I'm going to check out Friction's list, because that sounds cool. And I love to distribute that to my students, because it is hard to find a good curated list of contests, because the Poets and Writers one is just kind of more of a database than like a list. So you kind of have to know what you're looking for in there.
I will also
I will drop this in real fast into the chat, Josh. How terribly am I breaking this?
No, that's fine. That's perfect.
But this allows you to sort by money and deadline. And there's also a big tab for it just on general submissions. So that'll be like, is the Paris Review accepting Slush right now? Is it not? That sort of thing. This is the result of us like really, really sucking up to a bunch of programmers, and it's really pretty, and it's why we can't import it over. But we will import it over someday, guys.
I will also add, there's a website called New Pages that anytime there's a new contest, they will announce it, and they do calls for submissions and stuff too. So that's a good resource to keep an eye out for. Next question. Danny, I think I'll start with you again for this one. Do editors look more for expert writing skills or for creativity?
Ooh, well, the short answer is both. friction tends to get, like, we just give brownie points for just being really like weird and ballsy and creative more than I will give brownie points for like, this prose is so luscious, I want to read it out loud. I think stories can get pushed up the pipe if they're really inventive, even if the writing is like B quality, and then we can work on the writing. But you can write the most beautiful story about being angsty about your parents in New York, and I will never pass it up. So if you're going to focus on one thing, be cool, be inventive, take big chances, because anyone who works in an editorial pool, we will read the same stuff over and over again. We're all humans. We're all feeling the same sort of angst. And that means we mostly write about the same sort of things. So imagine that you've sat at an editorial desk and the only thing you've read all day is a story about Alzheimer's, and you've read it in 55 different ways. And you're thinking to yourself, oh God, if I read one more thing about losing your memories, I'm going to go insane. And then something really random, even with that same topic, falls on and it's inventive and it's cool and you don't know what's going to happen. That's going to spark your interest far more than this was so incredibly lusciously written. So start with your story, start with your character, start with your premise. You can always become a better writer and do that as you go.
Mm-hmm. Seth, anything to add?
No, yeah, I think that's great advice. And yeah, just as a reader too, like those kind of quiet medium stories were just really, really tough to get, you know, kind of like where you realize from the first page, I'm gonna have to read this whole 40 pages to know what's going on here, you know, or to know what kind of where it falls. So it's like, and that's just my personal case too, is like big swings. I think the thing I say in class a lot is like big choices elicit big reactions, like both positive and negative. And it's like, get that big negative reaction, because that's faster than, you know, you're going to find your people, your niche faster by making those big kind of character revealing decisions in your pieces. You're going to find the right editors faster, and you're going to blow past the wrong editors faster. So I think, yeah, just take big chances, because it's more fun too for you.
So I'm going to try to fit some more questions in here, running out of time. But Seth, I'm going to start with you on this one. Kind of a specific question, but are purchase critiques worthwhile in contests when you have the option to get an editorial letter? Is that worth it?
I mean, as a cocky writer, my feeling was like, I didn't really want notes unless you were going to publish it. But that was like probably an arrogance that held me back a little bit. You know, like if I had been open to that feedback, I probably would have... Probably would have developed as a writer sooner. So it's like, I think I still kind of maintain that boundary a little bit. Like I would kind of like do like kind of manuscript doctoring if you don't have privileged readers, and then submit. Like I don't really, because it's like they've already said that it's not the right piece for them. You know, so it's like, I like that existing more, what's happening there, I like it existing in that editorial gift economy of like, look, this is all kind of a crime of passion. I don't really have time to do this, but here's what I think about this piece. That makes it more meaningful versus like, I don't really need someone to describe how we missed each other in this piece. But yeah, I don't know. That's still too close-minded. But mm-hmm.
Danny, anything to add?
We don't do paid critiques because we just do free critiques. That's like the one thing we really held on to was like, okay, if people are going to pay $2 to submit, we're going to tell them why we accept or reject. And the stuff that's craft-wise, I find really, really valuable, which is why we allocate so much time and energy and money to it. So if it's something like, hey, the premise is really great, but this needs to start three pages in, just like Seth said, like the reaction isn't big enough, fast enough. And that is a really invaluable bit of information for a writer to be like, oh, am I already doing the right thing, but I need to take this bit out? A lot of times it's stuff like that. I mean, honestly, a lot of times it's very like Stephen King-esque, like, hey, there were so many adverbs in this that I could not read the sentence. And sometimes as a writer, we just get so locked into ourselves that we don't notice the kind of simple things we're doing wrong. And those are things you can adjust now, especially as a young writer. And so you're not doing it when you write an entire, you know, 120,000 word novel, and you've done the same things you could have fixed if just you would have been like, oh, I need to get to action faster, or I need to not use dialogue that's so thick it seems like no one would ever write it. So stuff like that I find really, really valuable, which is why we do it. So if you're learning about craft, great. But if the paid remarks are things like, hey, like we only publish incredibly weird sci-fi about dolphins and you submitted us stuff about humans in New Orleans, like that's clearly not helpful.
Next question should be a quick one. Danny, how important is the word count? For example, if there's a 2000 word maximum, is it best to get close to that max, or does it matter where it falls on that spectrum?
Usually there's a min and a max. And it's, as long as you don't go in, as long as you'll break the rules, you're totally fine. In terms of, again, with editor fatigue, I love stories. I've dedicated my life to them. When a pitch falls on my desk that's more than 5,000 words, I'm like, this better be good because I don't have time to read this. And I mean, luckily we have a good pipe and everything's good. But honestly, I'm not going to say that I don't look at word count and be like, oh, I can't fit this in before this, or I'm going to have to take time to do it here. So again, it doesn't really matter if what you're doing is really good, but it's often just, it's nicer if you can get a really good story to work in shorter space. But if you can't, if it needs all of those words, give them all those words. But really make sure it needs all of them.
Seth, anything to add?
No. that's great advice.
So the next question, last question, actually, I want to hear both of your takes on this. It's a good question. Danny, we'll start with you. If you could banish one type of submission from your inbox forevermore, what would it be?
Oh, wow. Oh, man. I think it's really angsty divorce stuff. Like, I don't know why, but it's fair. I mean, I've published angsty divorce stuff, but it's like mostly been in space or underwater. But there's just, I feel like it's so valuable, but people are clearly working out their relationship issues on the page, and how beautiful is that? But man, it just feels so angry and hostile, and they're almost all identical, and it scares me. And I just, it hurts me, man.
Seth, what about you? If you were to, let's say you were judging a contest again, what would be the one type of submission you don't want to see?
I think I've read enough in my life of like, you can kind of get, I tell people in their own work and when they're evaluating other people's work, like try to pay attention to how a story is enjoying itself. And when I start to feel like the story is enjoying itself by kind of like using fiction as a shield to just kind of say transgressive stuff, where it's sort of like, not that we should, you know, art is supposed to look in all corners, but when you get the sense that the story is enjoying itself, just by using it as this kind of like a place to say all these things that they know they can't get away with at a cocktail party, I start to feel like I've been cornered at a cocktail party and I'm just that someone's kind of like throwing their bile on me. I'm just kind of done reading that. And it's kind of like coming from that kind of Tarantino-y aggression of using the text as a way to kind of make people sit there and watch you burn ants with a magnifying glass. I'm kind of over it.
So to piggyback off to that, it's been so long since I've read The Bottom of the Slush, but that I 100% agree. I'm shocked at how much of that comes in.
Yeah.
So very last thing, I want to give you all a chance to promote if you have something coming up. Danny, of Friction, I believe Friction's new issue is coming out soon. Correct me if I'm wrong or if it's out.
It is. I mean, it's currently trapped in a COVID customs box just full of thousands of books. So we have a new issue coming out. It's legacy themed. It's gorgeous. I can't even get past how beautiful it is. We worked our ass off to just really show like really cool versions of legacy, but mostly like non-Western legacy, which I think is really valuable. So that's really amazing and really exciting. We have a contest going on right now. I'd say coherent things about it, but I don't know what they are. And I think that's most of our Friction plugs.
Seth, what about you?
That's great. Yeah. I would also recommend check out the next issue of Friction. I have the novel The Municipalist is relatively new. Something I just made. Yeah, please check it out. If you haven't, I'd appreciate it. Thank you. Also, I'm going to drop this in the chat. I'm really proud of this. I made this Twitter bot. It's called StoryBot. Just drop it in the chat. If you go there, it tweets random story prompts every hour. And if you tweet hashtag prompt to it, it will reply to you with a new prompt for you. So this is a fun free tool that if you want to use it, I'm just excited. I just figured out how Python works. I'm really, I'm getting out of hand with it. But yeah, check it out. If you need a story prompt or inspiration, stop by StoryBot.
Awesome. Well, Danny, Seth, thank you both so much for being here. To our listeners, we are going to be back next week. Same time, same place. We're going to be talking about changing your writing medium. So we'll be back to talk about that. Again, Danny, Seth, thank you both so much.
Thanks for having me. Yeah.
And we'll see y'all next week.